You know, as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, we have been looking at some things having to do with marriage. And you know, the elders have asked me to speak on that because one of the questions that was turned in a long time ago has to do with marriage, divorce, and remarriage. And I have a philosophy about that. My philosophy is we can spend all of our time talking about divorce and why it's wrong and why God doesn't want it and why God hates divorce and all of that, which we will get into some of that down the road in this series, or we can spend the bulk of our time talking about how to be married the way God wants us to be married. And I think that's a mistake we make too often in the church. We don't spend enough time teaching about good marriages, godly marriages, marriages like God wants them to be. When do you start, somebody might ask. I think we need to start when they're this tall. I think we need to start with the little boys and the little girls that are presently attending our congregation, and we need to start talking to them about what it means to be a husband, to be a wife, to be preparing for that person that God one day will bring into your life, to be a Christian husband, a Christian wife, a Christian father, and a Christian mother. Because if we start teaching that now, if we start training and developing, then we won't have to worry down the road because we're developing strong people who love God and who want to honor Him. Last week we looked at how Proverbs is a helpful guide in selecting a good mate, a good spouse. And today what I want us to do is go back to Proverbs and look at what Proverbs has to say about how we can be good spouses. You know, I hear this in marriages too often when marriages are in trouble. Well, if she wouldn't do that, or if he would do this, then our marriage would be just fine. Well, you know, there's one thing I can't do. I can't change my wife. I can't change her. She is what God has brought into my life. The only person I can change is me. I can't change any of you. I can tell you what God wants you to do, how God wants you to live your life, but I can't change you. You know, I have people sometimes say, are you straightening them out down there? And I say, no, I'm doing good just to keep myself straight. Because truthfully, all I can do, all any person that stands in this pulpit, stands before a classroom, can do is pass on what God says. And when we think about the importance of being the right person in our marriages, we need to understand why that is so important. It is because happiness in our lives is greatly affected by how successful we are in our marriages. Folks, if our marriages aren't what God wants them to be, then that affects our happiness in life. And not only does it affect our happiness in life, it affects our usefulness before God because of our relationship between ourselves and our spouses. The passage that was read for you just a moment ago, I hope that you noticed verse 7 of 1 Peter chapter 3, because men, it talks about the way we are to treat our wives. And then if we don't treat them in a godly way, that it will hinder our prayer life. That God will not listen to us because we're not being the type of husband we need to be. And so this morning, what I want to do is I want to do two things. I want to look at the virtuous wife and the ideal husband and realize that none of us are perfect. We all fall short because we are all sinners. We all shall fall short of the glory of God. But it gives us something to strive toward. It gives us something to aim for. And as we're trying to teach those little ones, what does God want you to be as a wife someday? What does God want you to be as a husband someday? Here are some guidelines that we can share with them and help them as they're trying to grow and mature and become more Christ-like in their own lives. But let's begin with that virtuous woman. You know, if you look at Proverbs chapter 31 there in verse 10 and go to the end of the chapter, what you find are some guidelines for a young man, a king by the name of Lemuel, given to him by his mother of what to look for in a wife. Well, ladies, that should talk to us, to those of you in this audience about what qualities God wants you to develop in your lives. And he gives several. As you kind of walk through, you'll find that he begins to tell us what this person is like. One of the first things he says about a godly woman is that, ladies, you're trustworthy. If you look at verse 11 of Proverbs 31, he says this. He says, the heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. What does that mean? It means that a husband can safely trust his income to his wife. He knows that she is not going to squander what he gives to her. And if anything, she's going to use it in a manner that befits both of them, benefits them. She's trustworthy. And he doesn't worry about what he gives to her and how she uses it. In many of our homes, our wives may be the ones who manage the checkbook. They may be the one who keep up with the bank statement and balance that. And that means that there are some men in this audience that trust their wives to take care of that. They know that she's handling it in an efficient way. So she's trustworthy. But ladies, something else that God says about you is that you are people who are, that virtuous woman is someone who is filled with what we might call an enduring love. In the very next verse, verse 12, it says that she does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She is devoted to doing good to her husband as long as God gives her breath upon the earth. You know, she vowed that when she stood before God in that audience of people, whenever it was, however long ago, and spoke those marriage vows, I will love, honor, and cherish you. See, that's the idea. Goodwill, love. But within that framework of this virtuous woman, she has what Solomon would call, or what maybe King Lemuel's mother would call, some practical skills. In verses 13 through 15, and then later in verses 21 and 22, she expounds upon these. She says that this woman, this virtuous woman, looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. She's like merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She rises also while it's still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. She has some abilities. She cooks, she sews, she knows how to take care of her family. In verse 21, she goes on to say that she's not afraid of the snow for her household, for all of her household are clothed with scarlet. She makes coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. This is a person that has some talents, some skills that add to and help out in the home. You know, one of the things that kind of some lost arts, because now it seems that it takes two incomes to keep a family going in many households. But there was time years ago where you may remember that the wife was the one sewed a lot of the clothes, a lot of the little dresses like what are being made for the young ladies in El Salvador. Women would sew those for their daughters. And I remember my wife telling me that her mother did not have a new store-bought dress for a long time when she was growing up, because her mother, my wife's grandmother, would make the dresses that they wore. You see, that helped keep the expenses down in the home so that the family could make it, and the meals were planned and prepared, and there were several other things. But this is a woman who has certain abilities. And not only that, he says she's industrious. If you'll notice there in verses 16 and then down in verse 24, this is a woman who is able to go out and do some things outside of the home. He says she considers a field and buys it. And from her earnings, she plants a vineyard. Or verse 24, she makes linen garments and sells them and supplies belts to the tradesmen. Here's a woman that makes investments. She's not just a homemaker. She's not just one that stays at home and doesn't do anything else. She makes some investments of her own outside of her husband's income. She buys land. She plants a vineyard. She provides extra income within the home so that there's a little more there to provide for the necessities of the home. This is a woman who is industrious. Tells us that she's a person that's compassionate. Women, God wants us all to be compassionate. But that virtuous woman, that woman that whose price, as King Lemuel's mother says, is far above rubies, is a woman that is compassionate, because if you'll notice verse 20, says that she extends her hand to the poor and stretches out her hands to the needy. She helps poor people. She reaches out to those who are in need. She provides for them. Why? Because she cares. I had somebody tell me just this past week of one of our young ladies who took a whole lot of food to a certain family. Family said, "Oh, we're fine," but she knew better. She provided for a need. Took it upon herself just to go and do. She was compassionate. Not that they were poor, but just that because of circumstances right now, there was a need there. She met that need. She reached out in her compassion. She is a woman that is of strong character. If you'll notice verse 25, we find strength and dignity are her clothing. She smiles at the future. She's not one that goes around wringing her hands about what tomorrow holds. She looks forward to the next day. Character matters. And this woman has developed a strong character. She is someone that is steadfast. This is something that Peter stressed in 1 Peter chapter 3, as was read for us earlier this morning. It says, "Your adornment must not be merely external, the putting on or braiding of the hair and wearing of gold jewelry and putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God." This is the type of woman that God looks for. That woman who has that gentle spirit, that quiet demeanor, but yet at the same time, she's got the strength within that makes a difference in a family. And this is a woman who, if you'll notice, she speaks words of wisdom and kindness. In verse 26, the statement that is made concerning her is that she opens her mouth with wisdom or in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She's a woman that is concerned about what comes out of her mouth. She isn't one that just goes about spreading gossip. She's not one that just goes about talking just to hear herself talk. She thinks about what she says. Kind of goes hand in hand with what Paul said in his letter to the church at Ephesus. If you'll notice Ephesians chapter 4, there in verse 29, Paul says, "Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, so it may give grace to those who hear." In other words, she speaks words that build up. This woman speaks words of wisdom. Kindness is on her tongue. You know, you can understand why the statement would be made initially that her price is far above rubies. If you find a woman like that, men, you have found a gem. You have found something to hold on to. You have found something that you don't want to let go of, because of the type of person that she is. And then he tells us that she diligently sees to her family's needs. She's concerned about her family. She looks well, verse 27, to the needs of her household or the ways of her household, and does not eat the bread of idleness. She makes the preparations that are necessary. Verse 15 told us she arises while it's still night. She gives food to her household. She makes sure that her family does not go in want. She's going to make sure that her family is taken care of. And then lastly, he tells us, or we are told, that this is a woman who fears the Lord. And I think that's the most important quality of all of them. She understands this quality as being more important and praiseworthy than just physical beauty. Why? Because with the fear of the Lord, she has the potential for great wisdom. Remember chapter 1 of Proverbs, verse 7? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. That's what we find in this woman. And these are the qualities, ladies, of what God says through the inspiration of the Spirit makes for a virtuous woman. But now, that being said, there are two things that a wife does not want to be, and one of these we've already touched on last week, and that is contentious. She does not want to be one that's always creating problems. Two passages, both in Proverbs 21, verse 9 and then verse 19. If you'll notice verse 9, Solomon says it's better to live in the corner of a roof of a house than in, at the corner of a roof than in a house shared with a contentious woman. And then in verse 19, he even adds to that, it's better to live in a desert land than with a contentious and vexing woman. He says, you just don't want to be in the same room with her. So that's one thing that a godly woman does not want to be. The other thing is she does not want to be hateful. In Proverbs chapter 30, there in verse 21, Solomon makes a statement that under three things the earth quakes, and under four it cannot bear up. And if you'll read through that, it talks about under a slave when he becomes king, a fool when he is satisfied with food, under an unloved woman when she gets a husband. Unloved woman when she gets a husband. And a maidservant when she supplants her mistress. Both of those involve women. Both of those make a person that others will not want to be around, and especially a husband. So these are things to teach our young ladies as they're growing up to avoid. Avoid contention and avoid being a person who is filled with hate. Learn to be a loving, compassionate, caring, kind person who speaks wisdom. Now, all of that being said, I know one question that some of you are going to ask is, where's the passage describing the virtuous man? You know, we've got the virtuous woman who can find. What about the virtuous man? You won't find anywhere in Proverbs that says a virtuous man who can find is priced far above gold or anything like that. It's not there, and yet it's a question that is often raised by women. But please bear something in mind, ladies, and men as well, and that is this. The book of Proverbs was primarily addressed to men. And while you have a half a chapter that's devoted to this virtuous woman, what you need to understand is that the other 30 and one half chapters, for the most part, are devoted to us men and what we're like and how we behave. And so if we follow the principles that are laid out in the book of Proverbs, men, we would be that husband that any woman could love. Because we're practicing those principles that God says through His Spirit are valuable in our lives. So what are some of those? If you're looking to be the ideal husband, men, here are some things to consider, and here's what we need to teach our children. Number one is this. We need to learn to value our wives highly. An ideal husband values his wife. He appreciates her. Notice what Solomon says in Proverbs 18, verse 22, he who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. Or Proverbs 19, verse 14, house and wealth are inheritance from fathers, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. You see, men, we realize that if we've got a good wife, that woman is a gift to us from God. God is the one who has blessed us with that person that is by our side, especially when she proves to be that prudent person that God speaks of. And we need to appreciate her. We need to value her highly. But even beyond that, a good husband is one who gives his wife her due. If you'll notice there in Proverbs 31, coming back to what we've been looking at, in verse 31, he makes this statement. Give her the product of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates. You see, man, a good husband allows his wife to develop her abilities. He lets her reap the benefits of her own labors. He doesn't take that away from her. And he doesn't treat her simply as an appendage of himself. She is her own person. He recognizes that. He's thankful to God for it. He gives her her due. But even more than that, take it just a step further. He is a man who praises his wife profusely. I don't do enough of that. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't praise my wife as much as I should. And I ask her to forgive me for that. But I've been blessed over and over again, abundantly so. She's much more patient with me than I ever deserve. But if you look at verse 28 of Proverbs 31, notice what the latter part of that, her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her, saying, many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. You hear that, men? He says, there's a lot of good women out there, but you're the best. You're the best. And I'm thankful that you're mine. He praises her frequently. He doesn't take her for granted. And then, two more, and we're going to come to a conclusion. If you'll notice Proverbs 31 again, verse 11, he trusts his wife implicitly. We talked about how she was trustworthy, But it takes a man to trust a trustworthy woman who understands that need. The heart of her husband trusts in her. He demonstrates a willingness to trust her in areas such as her intelligence, her faithfulness, her abilities. He's not jealous of her. He's not suspicious of her. He trusts her. Some of us have seen jealous men. Men who wanted to know where their wives were all the time. What are you doing? Who are you seeing? Where are you going? When are you going to be back? Men that wanted to control their wives. And yet an ideal husband is a man that trusts his wife when she says, I'm going to the grocery store. I believe she's going to the grocery store. I'm going to meet so-and-so. I believe she's going to meet so-and-so. I'm going to do this. I know she's going to do that. I trust her. That's what an ideal man, God says, does. And then finally, he is content with his wife's love. If you'll notice Proverbs chapter 5, if you begin in verse 15, and I'm not going to read all through verse 21, I'm just going to pull parts of it out. But the statement that Solomon makes to a young man is this: drink water from your own cistern and fresh water from your own well. Should your springs be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets? Let them be yours alone, not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth. Be exhilarated always with her love. For why should you, my son, be exhilarated with an adulteress and embrace the bosom of a foreigner? For the ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he watches all of his paths. In other words, what he says to us men is, don't be looking elsewhere. You'll save yourself and your family much harm if you'll pay attention only to your wives. Just a few examples of how we as men can be good husbands for our spouses. Now, all of that being said, what I want you to understand is there's so much joy and the meaning of life that we find when we have a good marriage, and God wants us to have good marriages. But I want to leave you one other thing that Solomon wrote in another book of wisdom, the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 9, here's what he said. He said, live joyfully with a wife with whom you love all the days of your vain life which he has given you under the sun, all your days of vanity. For that is your portion in life and in the labor which you perform under the sun. I ask you this morning, how are you doing? Are you that virtuous woman? Are you that ideal husband? None of us are. But are you working toward that? Are you striving to be what God wants you to be? And are you training your children to do the same? Because we want to build godly marriages in this church. We want to have husbands and wives who love each other and who are what God wants them to be. But you know what the beginning point of all of that is? The beginning point is to be faithful to Christ. To come to Him in obedient faith. To become His by putting on Christ in baptism. And living your life as a Christian. So that you and that potential mate are building on the same foundation, which is Christ alone. I ask you, if you've not done that, if you've not put Christ on, if you're not a Christian, won't you do so? Won't you come as together we stand and sing?